Lorena here from Everything's Canceled podcast. Herman and I hope you've been enjoying our show. The best way to support us right now is to subscribe to our Patreon for some exclusive episodes and more at patreon.com/everythingscanceled. And don't forget, there's only one L in canceled. And shop our new merch on our Shopify. The Shopify is everythingscanceled.myshopify.com. Now let's get to today's show. You're listening to Everything's Canceled podcast with your hosts,
Herman
and Lorena. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening to right now and follow us on Instagram at Everything's Canceled podcast. In each episode, we discuss topics in detail that could be triggering for some listeners, so please listen with care.
All content provided in this podcast is for general information and entertainment purposes only. This podcast may contain views and opinions which are those of the authors or guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any other author, agency, organization, or company. Any copyrighted content reproduced in this podcast is done so in accordance with Section 107 of the Copyright Act, allowing fair use and is not an infringement of copyright. Information discussed is true and complete to the best of our knowledge. Any information discussed referring to specific incidents are allegations only and unless proven otherwise in a court of law. Due to the changing nature of laws, rules, and regulations, the hosts make no representations to the accuracy or completeness of any information in this podcast and will not be liable for any errors, omissions, nor the availability of this information. The hosts will not be held liable for any losses, injuries, or damage from the display or use of this information.
Welcome to Everything's Canceled. We still don't have a tagline.
Yep. Welcome to our new podcast.
Yeah, it's the first episode. This is Herman and Lorena, and we, as promised, are bringing you the Russell Brand episode.
Yeah, we're trying to be timely and talk about something that's happening currently or that is somebody who just got canceled, so let's get into it.
It's so hard to be timely with a baby in our life, but we are going to do our best, and we hope you still enjoy it, even though you already saw this drama. Yeah, kind of unfolding.
We personally do not have a lot of time to record podcasts. We're probably going to get part of it done and have to record part of it later, and it'll be a little disjointed, but we're going to do our best here. So, and we're getting started, and we'll try and work ourselves into something worth listening to here.
You know what was really timely was Russell Brand's damage control video that he put out before the documentary.
I find that pretty gold.
Yeah, I find that gold. Okay, so Russell Brand. How do we know him? What was he famous for?
Oh, God. Well, Russell Brand, like, my personal relationship to Russell Brand is that he really became famous and really reached the peak of his fame at a time where I personally was probably as far from pop culture and involving myself in mainstream culture as possible. So Russell Brand missed me. Russell Brand missed me almost entirely. I probably have not seen any of Russell Brand's comedy. I've not seen any of the movies he was in. I've never seen Get Him to the Greek. I've never seen any of those other movies. Even at the time when he was working in Hollywood, I was even living in LA at the time. I probably had barely heard of the guy.
And you both were at Occupy.
Oh, it seems that around the time that Occupy was taking place was also when Russell Brand was one kind of reaching like the peak of his fame as far as like being in Hollywood movies. But also it seemed that he had a bit of a like, you know, cultural and social awakening at that time. And whether he was forced to because his career wasn't going so good or whether he purposefully did so, he seemed like he kind of stepped away from that and, moved on into being more of a political media influencer of types. But I think we'll get there.
Yeah, my personal relationship with Russell Brand is that at the height of his fame, early 2000s, I can definitely look back at his comedy at the time and see that it was heavily influencing the young men in my lives, like in high school, and his comedy and the taste of comedy. And he was sort of kind of that type of guy. He even wore like the same pants and the same stupid like hairsprayed hair that like all the boys that I liked in high school did. Like that scene, he was like a scene guy, you know, but I didn't really
after
like
it was cool.
Right. Probably. I mean, I was in high school, so everything was cool still, but
he had like very 2003 hair in like 2006 or 2007.
Oh, okay. Whatever. Hollywood. So then fast forward to when he kind of started his YouTube channel where he started talking about like political and social things. Like he's from the UK, so some of his like politics and stuff weren't completely relevant to me, or I didn't understand them completely, but he had some really like revolutionary ideas that I had never heard before. So as like, you know, my early 20s, I had like found his videos and they were very inspiring to me. Like, I felt like he was different in telling us something that we hadn't heard. Like, I don't want to say I fell into that trap, because it wasn't totally a trap. Like, there are still things about Russell Brand's views that I do agree with, and some that I don't, as I've watched them evolve. But, and obviously, we're here today to talk about, you know, some big things that I don't agree with. But overall, like, he kind of influenced a lot of my views on, like, anti-war views and things like that. He was saying things that people in my circle weren't. So I had respect for Russell Brand before this, and I hadn't really, he wasn't on my radar like The Onion said.
Yeah, I guess any time I actually know Russell Brand better from his, you know, more recent YouTube output, because my dad's actually into him and he's made me watch some of his videos. And it's interesting because, yeah, he does have a lot of interesting things to say. He's not a total dope. I think that he comes from a place where he has like kind of a functional class analysis and, you know, some of those ideas. And so some of the things he says make more sense than some other people who maybe haven't engaged with that.
I would say, like, one thing that we can get into a little bit overall when we start talking about these victims is, like, I want to steer away from the word narcissist because I'm not a doctor. However, I do think, like, there's something to be said with the personality type that you're smart, you're good with words, and you talk as if you are the world's teacher and everyone has something to learn from you. And you can become like really vulnerable to that personality type. It puts you in a position to really manipulate people with your words to make them feel like you are a god. And I think we see that come out a lot in these Russell Brand stories. So while I was entranced in his YouTube videos of him talking about the world and how everyone is after him and all these things, that's exactly comes to play like in his real life with how he treats these girls who were significantly younger than him. So while he's smart, the superpower of being smart, you can use that for evil in these ways. And I think that that's kind of the personality trait that we're dealing with here. So if you hadn't heard, Russell Brand is in the news right now because a UK documentary, what's it called? Dispatch?
Yeah, Dispatches, I believe. It's made by Channel 4, which is a BBC channel. Which he was also, I mean, he was a BBC star for many years, too. He was on their radio show, and so he was on a radio show on the BBC.
Yeah, he has a lot of history with the BBC, which I hadn't really, like, thought about till right now. But maybe this documentary is their opportunity to, like, compensate for them having him harming their audience for as many years as they were. But nonetheless, they've been working all year, at least, on this documentary of interviewing some victims that accused him of sexual assault to many degrees and overall verbal, emotional, abusive behaviors with co-stars and in the midst. But the big thing is the sexual assaults.
Yeah, basically in the documentary, they interview a number of different people, but primarily they interview four different accusers. Some of them have their stories read by actors, but they detail they go through into details about their experiences with Russell Brand.
So I came into this with a TikTok video that was sent to us by a friend with this woman that's like, hey, you need to be on the lookout because this documentary is about to come out and it's going to take down a well-known, well-loved comedian. And then right after that came Russell Brand's damage control video before the documentary even aired the next day. So his video is interesting because, you know, like I said, on his YouTube, he has all these like political views and a lot of them are pretty radical in this idea that the media conspires against people. It's, you know, he's got these big ideas and I feel like he kind of groomed his audience to be ready for him to be silenced. And that's exactly what he says in this video. So he starts off right off the bat, they have come after me. And if you read the comments on this video, it is full of people saying, oh my God, we are with you, Russell. We knew this would happen. Like they go after everybody. So he really kind of, he won his audience right away.
A number of other, you know, well-known influencers have come to his defense as well. Mm-hmm. Andrew Tate, Elon Musk, Ben Shapiro, I believe.
None of those are people I would want to come to my defense, but
in good company there.
Yeah, good Russell. Company. Yeah, so that was his damage control video. So Herman and I decided that we would watch this documentary. So what were your initial thoughts? How did it started with his comedy?
first off, it's called In Plain Sight, and I think that that is kind of really what the documentary sets out to show you, is that, you know, when you kind of put a lot of pieces together, like what you know about Russell Brand, his comedy being well known for, you know, raunchy or quote-unquote controversial sexual humor, what you know about his personal life and things like that, is that he was really... all of these, he was very much operating in plain sight. And that's something that we see, and I think that's a theme that we're going to see is really common among these different famous abusers, is that what they're doing is an open secret, and a very open secret. It's that everybody who knows, who works with them, knows that they're involved in some of these things, and that for them to continue their careers and to, you know, continue being famous and continue working, there has to be an entire network of people who... one, are, you know, who are promoting their careers and making it happen, but two, who are actively covering up the things that they're doing, even in some ways, they're collaborating. You know what I mean? There's times at which some of the people who are interviewed in the documentary say they, you know, they felt like pimps for Russell Brand. They're, you know, helping him get access to women who, and, you know, they don't know what exact nature of his relationship is to the women, but they know that they are involved at least in procuring women for him.
Yeah, many of the employees said that working with him was just like watching a revolving door of women. He was sleeping with them in his dressing room. He was picking out people from the audience and having his assistants feed them to him, essentially, consensually or not. And that plays into a lot of Russell Brand's brand, right? Like, he is a self-identified sex addict. He thinks of himself as a sex god. He was voted as Shagger of the Year, which I didn't even know was a thing. Like, Shagger of the Year, but...
yeah, some UK tabloid thing where he was Shagger of the Year for 3 years running, I believe.
Right. And so this documentary kind of, like, sets it up in a way where you can watch how his comedy, which is very crude and sexual in nature, and the way that he talks about sex really aligns with these victim stories. So they set you up to be watching him in plain sight talking about...
well, he's literally winning awards for being Shagger of the Year. He's being celebrated and promoted as a sexual person while he's also raping women. And I think that's something that we also come across with a lot of in a lot of these stories, is that there are people who are potentially having lots of consensual sex or living like this kind of like rock star type of lifestyle where, you know, they feel that they should be able to have sex with anybody that they want. And there probably are indeed a lot of people who want to have sex with them and who are willingly having sex with them. But then they're also committing violent acts against some of these women, and then they're forcing themselves on some of these women as well, which is some of the stories that they tell.
Right. And, you know, as for the employees, that we can kind of see as an accomplice in a lot of these situations to some of his crimes, but they talk about how the oversight was unclear, that even the people who did try to go to upper management and be like, some of this doesn't sit right with me, I'm not comfortable with this. It's like, well, that would go to one person, and that person was like, well, I don't deal with that. This person does. And it just seemed like it was a never-ending cycle of nobody really wanting to deal with it. But there were accounts of some of his employees feeling like they needed to keep walkie-talkies to be safe while they were alone with him. It was very well known amongst, you know, other comedians at the time that Russell Brand had these rumors attached to him. It was very well known with everybody, which is interesting. It was a lot of boys will be boys attitude around it.
Yeah, it was just goes to show how long some of these people were able to operate, you know, and stay famous and stay as celebrated individuals, you know, while these things are being covered up actively.
Right. And I think like something that, you know, is really going to be in question with Russell Brand's situation is how much these production companies are going to be responsible for him harming their audience. Because it seemed like almost all of the victims, if I remember right, were either people that he came in contact with from his shows, either by being a co-employee or being an audience member. So that's where these production companies are really trying to either tighten up their rules or have some sort of like comment on this, an apology or we'll see what ends up coming of that. But, you know, the statements were varying on the documentary from each of these companies, the BBC, Channel 4, you know, his co-stars and such.
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah.
Look.
We all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We going to have this, like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I got like, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Yeah. So in the Dispatches documentary, they interview, you know, four separate accusers who tell their stories, and they don't necessarily go in chronological order. They start with the first one, and she goes by the pseudonym Nadia. And because she met Russell in July of 2012 when he was working in Hollywood, and she tells her story.
So what's interesting about this victim is that there are actual text messages as evidence in this, and they are very clear that, one, she was terrified, and she definitely said no, and she repeats that back to him. I said no, and when a girl says no, it means no. And his response was not, oh, that didn't happen. It was, I'm sorry. He acknowledges that it got out of hand. And all of these are allegations, but what we do know are the text messages that ensued between them, in that she went to a rape crisis center and not the police. So at this time, she was treated by a rape crisis center. And,
but she did not choose to go to the LAPD at that time.
And what's interesting is, like, lining up with his comedy, he often makes jokes about how, you know, because she talks about how scared she was and she ran away. And it aligns with his jokes about how sex should be both thrilling and terrifying.
Well, I think Nadia's story, and probably the reason that comes up first in the documentary, is one, that takes place kind of at the height of his fame. But two, also, it's very clear, and she makes it very clear, that he forcibly raped her, that she told him no. There are text messages detailing that conversation that happened afterwards where she repeats that, and, you know, and he acknowledges it to some level by apologizing. And then also the next day she went to a rape crisis center and gave a full report. So it is well documented what happened.
I pulled up the text messages between Russell and Nadia.
Yeah, you want to read them for us?
Yeah, because the specific words that are used are... Okay, here we go. So Russell actually messages her first after the incident, and he says, I'm sorry, that was crazy and selfish. I hope you can forgive me. I know that you're a lovely person. X. And then she says, you scared the shit out of me. You're right, I am a lovely person, and for you to take advantage of me like this is unexpectable. You have a problem, you need help. It's dangerous that you think you can get your own way all the time. Do you know how scary you are when that glazed look comes over you? When a girl says no, it means no. Do I have to go and get myself tested? Last time you asked me, condom or no condom. When I say condom, that doesn't mean it's optional. You don't have the best reputation. I pride myself on being safe and trying to make the right decisions. Obviously, this was a bad one. I'm so disappointed. And then he says, I'm very sorry. You don't need to get tested. I will make this up to you somehow with love and kindness. Not my original idea, which was more sex. You've been lovely to me, and I'm embarrassed by my behavior. Sorry. Will you ever forgive me? So, like, that is a full admission. He knew he did something wrong, and there was no gray area for her. She wasn't confused if that was rape or not.
Yeah, she pretty much went directly to a rape crisis center and gave a full report. And, you know, details of that report are also in the documentary as well.
And it sounds like she did everything that people tell victims to do, right? Like, she says that she said no. She scolded him after she escaped, tried to escape, you know, and then went to a crisis center. So, you know, as far as perfect victims go, this is one.
So I think we can probably move on to Alice.
Yeah, so that's victim number two. Is this the underage one? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the next victim that they note was a 2006 incident. This... She was underage, but in the UK, the age of consent is 16, and she was 16.
Yeah, the incidents took place around 2006, and at the time she was 16 years old, which is the age of consent in England. And at the time, Russell was, how old was he?
30 or 31. Yeah, I saw 30s, two I different times, which maybe Early he 30s. Had a birthday at the time. But they were actually in a relationship for like a short period, like a couple months. And she reports being like super love bombed by him. He was like, we're going to get married. I want to have babies with you, which seems to be a theme with all of his victims.
Yeah. She describes meeting him outside of the MTV studios in London, I believe, and that he was very excited to meet her. And yeah, she uses both of those terms directly, that she describes text messages are detailed in the documentary as well. But she describes him as specifically as grooming her, as love bombing her for one, which is that, you know, he's telling her all these things like, oh, yeah, I want to get married to you. You're so wonderful, all this stuff. And then also she describes some scenarios in which she, you know, at the time, she didn't think as much of it, but when she later reflected on it, was like, oh, well, he's grooming me. There was specifically a time that she describes where he wants her to meet up with him, and she says that her parents aren't going to let her go. And so he tells her that she needs to sneak out, and he proceeds to start telling her what she needs to say to her parents, describing how what she needs to do. And then even they go so far as they do like an entire role play scenario where he plays as her parents and coaches her on what to say so that she can sneak out to come see him.
I just cannot imagine. That's how old I am right now. And I cannot imagine talking to a child, teaching them how to sneak out of their parents' house so that I can fuck them. That's just insane. And of course, like, there's going to be like apologists for this. Oh, it's legal. But it's like, well, the age of consent for a 16-year-old, if that's even an appropriate time for an age of consent, is ideally for someone that is, you know, within a few years of that age, not a 31-year-old. It blows my mind. But that is not even the problem here.
She describes him as being very excited about her age. And she also she says that at the time she was a virgin, and when Russell found out that he was a virgin, that he was very excited about this. She says that he scooped her up in his arms and was calling him my baby and my little dolly and things like that. So
yeah,
he was into this. He was getting off on it.
She really recounts feeling like a child with him, like he was like a father figure when she was with him. Like, she describes like driving in the car and just kind of feeling like a small girl being directed by an adult. She didn't feel like an equal. But nonetheless, that's her age and all that, super problematic. But that is not the only, it wasn't just that he was with an underage girl, it's that he raped her. So her accusation of rape was really devastating. And again, the documentary sort of lines up his comedy act where how she describes her rape is being described in his comedy as a joke. It's very graphic. I just can't imagine this being your introduction to sex. It's so devastating. But she goes on to say that he choked her by putting his penis down her throat until she like couldn't breathe and had her mascara running. Oh, and that he spit into her mouth and made her swallow it while she was gagging. And these are all very specific things that he mentions in his comedy that he enjoys doing to women.
There are clips of one of his comedy specials, the one where he's wearing a bullet belt and his hair looks extra stupid. And he makes jokes specifically about blowjobs where the mascara runs and how he likes that. And this is something that he specifically said and did to Alice. And then also he makes lots of jokes about spitting during sex. And spitting seems to be a real thing. And it's just so of the era, right? Do you remember like pornography from like the early 2000s and like
spitting being like a big thing in pornography at the time?
I think I was too young. I like, for me, when I think back about like the things that were in then, like biting was really big.
Biting and scratching.
And biting
right?
and scratching.
And I think there were all these kind of things to make it seem like oh, I'm so sexual. Yeah. I do these wild sexual
you
things.
You weren't sexy or you weren't good at sex if you didn't have scratch marks at the end and bite marks and like.
Well, I feel like, and I think that spitting really falls into this category too. I feel like I specifically remember, and some personal background info, at the time around 2005 and 2006, I happened to work at a company that sold internet pornography. That was their primary thing. So part of my job was to watch pornography at my job. And so I have a little bit of a small amount of expertise in this very specific time period and what was being depicted in pornography at the time. And I really remember spit being a thing then that it is not now. But anyways, it just
the expertise you bring to this podcast. This is great.
He specifically jokes about this, about how spitting makes any sexual act better. And you know, this was something that she described as something he did forcefully to her, spitting in her mouth specifically. She describes it as just being so horrible and disgusting.
Again, I can't imagine that being your introduction to sex and just having no idea what, like, sex is supposed to look like. And it's just horrifying. This poor girl.
He's making jokes that the whole audience is laughing at about things that he's specifically done. And it's about raping women and violent sexual encounters.
Yeah, and it definitely was a time where the understanding of what rape is was not as clear to the public. So this audience of people listening are not listening under the lens that he's raping the woman he's talking about. They're just seeing him as this, like, this sex god, this guy who fucks so much and does all these crazy things, and this is how he has sex, and he's entertaining, he's captivating as he does it, and very expressive. And personally, like, comedy can be very triggering for me because, like, a little bit of my background into this is that, like, I have a lot of sexual assault in my life. And specifically, I've always felt like comedy fueled, like, the young men that assaulted me, because it's like this comedy really gave permission at times to push those boundaries. And nowhere in these comedy skits are they saying, but don't worry, like, I asked for consent, this girl wanted it. There's no balance to that. And these, you know, maybe his comedy was for adults, but who watches comedy? Teenage boys and young men, you know, this is being fed to them. And so I really felt that, you know, this poor girl not only had this experience, but then he just got paid as a comedian to tell these jokes to the public, and she can see the videos of all these people laughing. It's very invalidating.
It's another example of him, you know, being celebrated and promoted for being a rapist.
Yeah, which maybe we'll get more to this, but a lot of his employees, like his assistants and stuff, said specifically that it felt like he was being rewarded for this bad behavior all the time with promotions. That, you know, he would assault somebody or there would be a complaint and there would be promotions. And how confusing, right?
That segues into the next victim who is profiled in the documentary, because this victim, she met Russell while she was working on, she was a PA on one of the shows he hosted. So Russell first became famous. He really rose to fame as a host of the show that came after Big Brother. I guess it was called Big Brother E-Forum, and later the name of the show was changed to Big Brother Big Mouth. And this started around 2004.
And what's interesting about the Big Brother show is that all of the people who seemed to, like, work there had this understanding that it was against the rules for him to be dating an employee. But what's interesting is, like, Channel 4, they deny that this rule was a rule. So I don't know if that was really to, like, excuse the situation. But I thought that was interesting that all the employees had the understanding that he was doing this against the rules. But nonetheless, he had developed a relationship.
Yeah. So this woman, I believe she's a PA, a production assistant. She said that, you know, because she kind of developed a relationship with Russell, she said that the production of the show would kind of use her as a go-between. And so she kind of became like the main person who was like, you know, involved with, you know, get Russell, do things for Russell, do whatever Russell needs for the show to happen. Right. And she describes a couple different situations. You know, she was sent to go get Russell, or she had to go into Russell's dressing room for whatever reason. And Russell was nude and he exposed himself to her and attempted to solicit oral sex from her. She describes as she did not take up his offer, but after that they did begin a sexual relationship. I think that her story is interesting because it really starts to bring out some of the connections between the people who are employing Russell and their relationship to what he's doing, and how much is known about what he's doing, and how much is he being allowed to do.
This is also recounted in Russell Brand's book. Well, he has several books about himself, and he admits that he had built up a bit of a reputation by this point, and it was sort of well known that he was what he calls promiscuous. And so in his, again, this is controversy over whether it was against the rules for him to date this employee or not, because he recounts in his book that he had to agree to be on his best behavior sexually, like saying that he had to take this job knowing that he had to tone down his sexuality to do so.
Rachel mentions this about there being a clause in his contract that he's not allowed to date or have sex with anybody from the production of the show. And then it seems as though that same type of thing is mirrored in his book. He talks about there potentially being a clause in his contract that he wouldn't sleep with anyone on the show or anybody involved with the production of the show. This is after he's already been to rehab for both drugs and for sex addiction. But those claims are refuted by Channel 4 or BBC, where the show was hosted. And that seems to continue to this day. They either are blocking anybody's access to that information, or they deny that any of that ever really happened, you know?
Yeah, and they just reaffirm that there are strong policies in place now to prevent these things.
I think that what's kind of notable about Rachel and her story is that, you know, similar, it's so similar to all the other stories, but she feels as though, you know, she was really groomed for having a sexual relationship with Russell by the production of the show that she was working on, that they basically used her as a go-between, but that also that involved her having a sexual relationship with Russell.
Yeah, it's interesting because universally all of his victims that came forward used the word groom to describe how he manipulated them.
And so to kind of corroborate Rachel's story about what happened while she was working on Big Brother eForum that Russell Brand was hosting, the documentary also interviews three other crew members from the show. They describe a little bit more about Russell's behavior and exactly what kind of was the environment of how things went about in the production of this show. One of them describes, she says that the show Big Brother eForum was filmed near a university. And so most of the people who were in the audience were university students, and that Brand would have, you know, had that was would regularly pick out women from the audience that he wanted to meet, and he would use members of the production crew, PAs or otherwise, to contact them, to give them a note that, you know, had his phone number or a hotel room or something like that. And they describe this as happening often. This is a very common occurrence, and like an everyday type of occurrence.
Yeah, essentially, like, and that's where it comes in, where like the production company was handing these women to him, essentially, because if they didn't have an audience, he wouldn't be. He was pulling them straight from their audience. So
in her story, she says that, you know, it was pretty common practice for sometimes to have some of these women call and they'd be upset about one thing or another. She, you know, as far as she knows, she doesn't, you know, accuse
Russell Brand of necessarily, you know, raping or sexually assaulting any of those women, but she says she doesn't know what happened. Ultimately, she felt like they would become pimps for Russell Brand. You know, they were procuring women for him.
There's definitely a reputation being built around Russell Brand and whether or not he is a safe person. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you know, there were these complaints coming in, but like I had said earlier, there's really like nowhere to send these complaints where they would result in a result. There was, you know, unclear oversight is what they said.
Yeah, another crew member describes a story where she's sent to pick up Russell Brand from a hotel room, and she was specifically warned against being alone with him, and that she was harassed and solicited for sex by Russell Brand, and that she was told that she always carried her walkie-talkie on her because she felt that she was unsafe around him. These complaints were reported to the management at Channel 4 and the company that Indomol, and that nothing was done about it.
And then this is also where, you know, there was that one assistant that came in that you and I didn't really like. She makes a comment about being out with him somewhere, maybe it was a bar or something after work, and he was showing photos of naked women that he had slept with or who had sent photos to him, and he was showing off these photos to, you know, some male friend next to him. And I think she was able to shove that out of her head in just a boys will be boys type of attitude towards it until she saw that one of the photos was one of her friends. And that was when it hit her that she felt, you know, really bad for these girls, that she felt like they had been taken advantage of.
Yeah, and I'm repeating myself. Like I said before, they describe, like, you know, not really knowing about the specifics of what went on between Russell Brand and the many women that they do describe him being with. But it's hard to say exactly how much they do know. I deny that, too.
So then the documentary.
Yeah, we get to move forward in Russell Brand's career here. And that's one of the things that's described in the documentary. It seems that Russell, at every stage of his career, would conduct himself in a way that most people would not continue having a job. But instead, for Russell Brand, it seemed that it always led to something bigger and better. And after being host of Big Brother eForum, which later became Big Brother Big Mouth, he hosts his own radio show on BBC Radio 2. And that show is titled The Russell Brand Show.
His comedies being named like Second Coming and Messiah Complex are so spot on. At least he recognizes that he's a narcissist.
Well, and this is something that we were talking about a little bit, is there is so much Russell Brand material.
Yeah.
We
watched a few.
He's got a half a dozen books. He had a radio show. He hosted at least 3 or 4 TV shows. You know,
he had the whole like addiction show.
Numerous comedy specials. There are several documentaries made about him, not just dispatches, ones that are documentaries that are profiles of Russell Brand. There are several documentaries about him and his rehab and his recovery. There is so much material from Russell Brand. We really get to hear a lot from this guy, what he has to say.
We literally watched him, what was it, smoke heroin? But yeah, so he goes on this radio show. And
well, he is his show.
It's his show. He's the host of the show.
It seems like this radio show is pretty loose too, and there's a lot of debate and about who exactly had editorial control over the Russell Brand show when it was on BBC Radio 2.
Yeah, and once again, like, we see him have another platform where his entire personality is his sexuality. Like, literally, like we just said, there is a lot of material on Russell Brand, and there was a very small percentage of it where it was not discussing sex. Like, that's all he talks about. It's pretty wild. Like, I know that he, like, says that he has a sex addiction. I don't know how much that excuses that behavior, but I mean, literally everything he talks about is sex. It's pretty crazy.
That's one thing that was really difficult to determine too, was when exactly was he sent to rehab for his sex addiction? It was early in his career.
Did he check himself in or
no? His management forced him to go. His management forced him to go to rehab the first time. That was in the documentary that we watched about his recovery.
Okay.
He has an entire, there's an entire documentary, Russell Brand From Addiction to Recovery. There are two of them actually about him getting clean. But in the From Addiction to Recovery documentary, he gets new management who force him to go to rehab. And then after he got back from rehab for drugs, then they forced him to go to rehab again for sex addiction.
Okay.
But it really seems like that's would have taken place around this like early mid 2000s time. And so, you know, that would put it maybe right in between Alice and Rachel so far. So it's like how much it seem like it really changed his behavior in any way.
I have a note right here that says still raping women after his book and documentary about his rehab for sex addiction. So the rehab was in between some of these victims.
Okay, well, more insight. there's a couple incidents that get discussed in the documentary of things that took place on his BBC Radio 2 show. One of them is that there's a newsreader, a female newsreader who works on, you know, who must be on like maybe the news on one of the news shows at BBC Radio 2, and he continually harasses this woman. He talks about how sexy she is and how much he wants to be with her and all of these things he's going to do with her. And, you know, apparently she heard about this and heard some of the things that he was saying about her on a radio show, and she complained to senior colleagues. And Russell Brand, hearing that she complained about it, his reaction was, of course, to dig in deeper and to keep harassing her and to continue with that. And so despite the fact that she complained about the way that he was talking about her on a radio show, he not only was nothing done about it, but his response was to harass her further. And so moving on, another incident that is now semi-infamous from that took place on Russell Brand's BBC Radio 2 show is his interview with Jimmy Savile. And younger audiences might not be particularly familiar with Jimmy Savile, but Jimmy Savile is a very famous personality in England. He was a DJ and host of the Top of the Pops show, which is a television show that had, you know, number one musical acts would come and perform on TVs. It was a pop music show. After his death, it came out that he's a prolific sexual predator. There are potentially hundreds of cases. We're going to have to get into this further because I don't know many of the details about it, but it's something that didn't come out until, basically, it didn't come out until after his death.
And on this interview, they got 44,000 complaints on just that one interview that he had done.
So during the interview, Russell Brand says that he'd like to meet Jimmy Savile. And Jimmy Savile says, well, I don't usually meet men, but maybe if you brought an attractive sister, I'd be a lot more interested. To which Russell Brand replies, well, I don't have a sister, but I do have an assistant who's attractive. And I wanted to directly quote him because he says it's part of her job description to do whatever I say.
Ugh.
And Jimmy Savile says, you know, that's great. You should send her along to do some research is the exact language he uses. And I think that kind of coded language shows a lot about the way that these men interact and the way in which they operate.
Yeah, the sister thing freaks me out too. It's like the expectation that he should pimp out his own sister too, and how that's like not even just listening to two creeps talk to each other.
Yeah, the only way to meet this important person is to, you know, offer up a
female
sacrificial.
Yeah.
And so moving on, the third incident of note that takes place on Russell Brand's BBC Radio 2 radio show later becomes known as Saxgate. And this took place in October 2008. And on the show, he had a co-host with him, a man named Jonathan Ross. And Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross call up Andrew Sachs, who is a well-known actor in England, probably not so much here in the United States, but he is there. And they left a harassing voicemail on his phone about how Russell Brand had sex with his granddaughter. And it's a harassing voicemail, so it's like, oh, we fucked your granddaughter, ha 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 ha, type of shit. And ultimately, there were so many complaints about this incident that it ultimately led to the end of the radio show. And Russell Brand had to resign. Radio 2's controller, a woman named Leslie Douglas, had resigned. And another person resigned too. I can't even remember who the fuck it was.
Oh, this is the one that had 44,000 complaints. And I think that rolls us right into victim 4, right? Do you have a date for victim 4? or a year?
Yeah, this took place in Hollywood around 2013. So she met Russell Brand at an AA meeting in Hollywood, and they began a consensual sexual relationship. But I believe it only happened once. And then afterwards, he, you know, he liked her so much that he ended up hiring her as like a personal assistant.
And this is also another one where he just completely love bombed her from the beginning. I'm going to marry you. I'm going to have your babies, and really just like promised her big, big things.
As a personal assistant for Russell Brand, she really got to see kind of his everyday life and what was going on. She said that since, you know, she'd had a sexual relationship before sometime with him, sometimes it was hard to be involved in some of this stuff for her emotionally. But she describes his lifestyle as involving a revolving door of women, sometimes up to five a day is something that she describes. Basically, you know, everything that they did revolved around fulfilling Russell Brand's sexual needs.
There seems to be, you know, a theme where if women sleep with him, they get some sort of opportunity working for him. There's some sort of like power dynamic there where it seems pretty clear that if you give him the sex he wants, he can move you forward. And what will come into play here is that if you fight against it, you can lose everything. He hires her on and she's witnessing all of this, and it takes some time before, you know, I just don't want it to be used against her, and I'm sure she felt like this was used against her, that she had feelings about him sleeping with other women because she had slept with him, like natural feelings of jealousy or whatever. That doesn't affect, you know, the truth that she could be jealous and she could be raped. So moving forward.
Yeah, so she does describe a specific incident that takes place with Russell Brand. And it's interesting how much this mirrors some of the previous incidents. And it's a time where she's working for Russell Brand. He invites her in and he tries to have sex with her. She describes him as chasing her around the room, and that he locks her in a bedroom. And that she's screaming at him, screaming, stop, I don't want to do this. I don't, you know, stop, don't do this. And at that point that he did stop, but his reaction was to flip out on her, that he's screaming at her, tell her to get out.
I think what's important to note here, too, is that she didn't just come over. He didn't just invite her over. But this wasn't like a planned event of like, come over to my house. Like, in no way was she expecting this at all. Nor had they had a sexual relationship for a long time. She said, I can't remember if he was naked or in his underwear, but he ended up naked quickly if he hadn't started that way. That is recalled in some of the other stories that women will walk in and he's just like naked and aggressive.
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty common theme running through a lot of these. And so at the time, there were people who were waiting to have a meeting with Russell Brand outside. And when she went outside, she said that she went into the driveway in the front of the house and they were all standing outside waiting. And she said that they were all right outside the house while all of this was taking place. And she said that she even talked to one of the people who was there later, and he said that they could absolutely hear her screaming and everything that was happening in the house. But because Russell Brand is so famous and they were all waiting to have a meeting with him, that none of them felt comfortable even trying to interfere in any way.
I want to like think in my head that they thought maybe what was happening was like some crazy kinky sex or something that she was consenting to, and that's why they didn't. I just can't imagine hearing a woman screaming and not checking. That just blows my mind. There were witnesses to this that heard her screaming, and then eventually, you know, word had gotten around that she was making these allegations that he tried to rape her. So he did corner her about these rape allegations, and that if she felt like it was rape, then he was going to lawyer up. And this is when she essentially quit.
He intimidated her and told her basically that if she was going to make allegations against him, that he was going to retaliate legally. And that also, and that's another stream that kind of runs through some of these stories, because Alice, the girl who met Russell when she was 16 back in 2006, says that later in 2020, after she's a little bit older and she, you know, she can reflect on some of the things that happened to her, she contacted Russell Brand's agent, his literary agent, to talk about her abuse. And she said that she pretty much, the only response that she got was that she received an email from his lawyer threatening her.
That was at the height of the Me Too movement, too. Anyways, so then moving on to the Russell train, we get the first actual public allegation that the world hears about, and that is in his ex's...
You're talking about Jordan Martin.
Yeah, the one who wrote the book Knot, K-N-O-T, mm-hmm. Apparently 2014.
She released this book under a pseudonym, but it was pretty clear that it was by her and about him.
Yeah, and she says that he sexually assaulted her and was very sexually aggressive and abusive in other ways, emotionally, verbally. And then a newspaper did an editorial on it, right?
Yeah, so the story was picked up by the Mail on Sunday, and they ran the story about Jordan Martin and about her book.
Like a year later.
But I guess specifically, any reference to sexual assault was removed.
Yeah, they censored that entire part out. So while it was a public allegation, it was still censored out of the actual media. And so you would have had to find it in her book.
Well, I think this time period kind of marks a bit of a shift in Russell Brand's career that ultimately brings us to where he is now, right? Because it seems like around this time, 2013, he has a special come out, the Messiah Complex special. And then around in 2014... he doesn't really appear in major movies anymore. He really starts to make a name for himself by going on talk shows, on TV, and on the radio, talking about politics, talking about his viewpoints. And
well, and what's interesting is, like, why did he move away? What did he move away from his comedy when he was doing so well? Because he needed a change, or because he needed to hide? Because these rumors about him were becoming so, you know, well known that maybe people weren't wanting to work with him and it was affecting his career? Or, you know, like, you might as well quit while you're ahead, right?
It's certainly possible. I'm sure Russell would have you believe that, you know, he felt that it was more important to start talking about these issues than to continue his career. But is that true? I don't know.
Right. Well, I've a quote by him that I find really interesting, too, is that he says that people will let you be you as long as they make money off of you. So there's definitely, we can build right off of that and say, did they stop making money on him because he was becoming problematic in all of these career outlets that he had explored, the radio, his comedy? That if you start getting complaints and you start getting, you know, other problems and having to fire employees and such, maybe they can't let you be you anymore. I love that his shift from this to his YouTube channel was this shift where he's like, I'm leaving all of that to become more enlightened. And so we'll get into the more enlightened Brand.
Yeah, so what does Russell Brand do now, right? It's basically more of the same. He had a very popular YouTube channel.
Well, I have one thing to say before we get into what his YouTube is.
Okay, then do that.
Well, where Russell Brand is right now that is also notable for me is that he got married and he has two daughters and another baby on the way as we speak. Two very young daughters. He became a dad in like 2016 and he had been married for a little bit before that. So that's right at the end of the height of his comedy and into his YouTube world is right when he got married and settled down and started really creating an image of this woke family man.
Or is he anti-woke?
Or anti-woke, whatever the fuck he is, a wellness influencer. And what's interesting is, like, a lot of his wellness influencing is telling women how to be healthier and better women, which I find fucking gold. And interestingly enough, he sort of had this, like, obsession, you know, in this time, and we saw it on a different documentary where he was talking about drug addiction and going out and helping people in the public. But he has this, like, obsession with Amy Winehouse and her death. And I find it super fucking ironic that, like, this inspired him to, you know, go out and help addicts because he had helped himself and he should have helped her because he knew her and he saw she was going down. And what's so interesting is, like, when we look at Amy Winehouse and maybe why she had some of the addictions that she had, we can look into her history and we know that she had been mistreated by men in her life. So in no way does he recognize that he could be a culprit in so many of these women's lives and to their own deaths and downfalls, but he like looks at Amy Winehouse and doesn't look at his own sins against women and instead inserts himself as he should have been her savior. He could have been her savior. And I find that just fucking gross. It upsets me. And now calls himself I don't know if he self-identifies as a wellness influencer, but certainly that's what he's recognized for online.
Yeah, that seems to be where he's landed, is in the fertile grounds of the wellness influencer social media sphere.
All narcissists want you to believe that they're more like spiritual and more feminist. It's like a perfect mask for that. You know, from his movies to TV to radio, he literally hurt women everywhere. He has victims from all areas of his life over a long span of time. And his victims didn't know each other, but all of their stories align in a lot of ways. So I think that's really important when we talk about this to recognize. But yeah, so he starts this YouTube channel, and it's like very on brand for Russell Brand to get at this YouTube channel and to like leave this Hollywood life to create his own little space where it's just him and he can be his own sounding board with no, I don't know what his editing process is, but it seems to be very similar to his other editing processes with like the radio show where there isn't one. And it's just, you know, he thinks everyone needs to listen to him. He has so much media that's just him. And it's like, it's almost to overcompensate. Like if he talks enough, we won't listen to his victims.
Yeah, well, I mean, he directly claims that what they're saying is untrue, right? He says that any relationship that he's been involved in is consensual and that these are lies. He says that specifically, right?
Well, and he really grooms his audience to already be ready for this, right? So his entire YouTube channel is that he's paranoid about everything. The media is after him. The government is after him. Everyone is going to be after you, after this person, after him. So when these allegations came out, it was very easy for him to put out this video doing damage control because he's like, well, guys, like it happened. They came after me. Like when you read the comments in that YouTube video, I didn't see a single one calling him out. They were all like, oh, you know, we got you, Russell. Like, you're a good man. You've been telling us about this. Of course they came after you. When you've got young daughters and a wife, you've left that world behind. It's very like Illuminati. Like, of course they came after you.
Well, yeah, it seems like the first place he goes when this documentary isn't even out yet is to claim that, you know, this is part of a media conspiracy against him, right? And, you know, he's insinuating that, oh, he must be getting so close to the truth that now the mainstream media is, you know, conspiring against him so that they can take him down. And, you know, it must be because, you know, he's speaking truth to power. But it seems that, like, there may be conspiracy in why this is only coming out at this time. That seems to be the only conspiracy there. He's also claiming that basically that all of these people must be liars, right? Because all the relationships he's had in the past are consensual.
Yeah, but
listen to their stories. Are they lying?
Right. I mean, it seems like the point to this is that the greatest conspiracy of the media and these programs has been that they have covered his allegations all the way up to this point. And it took until this specific documentary had put them all together and pieced them together. And I don't know like the motivation behind that. I don't know why they put it together now, or if they were just able to, or if the victims had come together and decided, you know, I don't know what the conspiracy there is, but the fact is all of these victims have varying evidence. There's witnesses to one, there's text messages to another.
Yeah, the conspiracy is in, you know, why was this allowed to continue for so long? How was he able to operate in plain sight like this?
Yeah, it's like, well, if there is this conspiracy here, it's amazing that society and his fans and all that have immediately jumped to the conspiracy must be these women attacking him, instead of the conspiracy being that maybe these media companies and production companies and fellow employees and all these other people have helped keep this under wraps, who have dismissed it over time, who have ignored the allegations, to where it took this long for all to come together. And maybe it did just take until getting to 2023, where maybe these victims would be listened to, for them to be able to put this together, for it to hold up. Maybe if they had put this documentary out, you know, a few years ago, nobody would have listened.
Yeah, it was an open secret among anybody who he's worked with that this type of thing takes place. If there's any conspiracies to cover it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So ultimately, there's been a response to these allegations that have taken place. YouTube has demonetized his channel. Russell Brand has been dropped by his management, Tavistock Wood Management, and also by his book publisher, Bluebird. Some of his content has been removed by the BBC.
And there's word that there could be some lawsuits coming, right, from these victims?
Yeah, there's the potential for that as well. But also, a formal complaint of sexual assault has been made to the Metropolitan Police in London as well. There's the possibility that Russell Brand could be facing criminal charges. It would mean that there is an investigation taking place currently about an incident that took place with Russell Brand in 2003 in London. There's the possibility that Russell Brand will ultimately face criminal charges either in the UK for that or in California for the events that took place. As far as we know from the information that we were given in this documentary and otherwise, it doesn't seem as though Russell Brand was ever reported to police in the United States or in California for sexual assault. But there's question about, I mean, what you're questioning whether there's a cover up there. We don't know that.
I don't know so much about a cover up as much as like, well, were they trusted enough to make reports with?
Yeah, I think that is definitely true, where it seems that the victim who did immediately go to a rape crisis center and report what happened to her, that she didn't feel comfortable going to LAPD, or that, you know, she didn't want to for whatever reason. Either she didn't feel comfortable, or maybe she didn't think anything would really be done.
I mean, just as it was as well known that Russell Brand assaults women, possibly, it's just as well known that celebrities have the upper hand, where they can definitely get excused of their behaviors. Like, would anything have happened anyways? Would he have just come at them with lawyers? It's very intimidating to, I imagine, to go after a celebrity, which is like plays into just more of the more realistic conspiracies here, which is, do we even have a police system in place that is worthy of being called a resource for these women?
Yeah, questionable.
So where do we place Russell Brand on the canceled spectrum radar, the canceled graph?
How bad was it?
I think that he is appropriately canceled, should have been canceled earlier.
Yeah, let's face it. It's a little too obvious in this dude's case. A little too obvious, and pretty amazing that he was able to continue operating the way he has for so long.
Yeah, he has a lot of victims over a lot of years with a lot of evidence, you know, between his comedy and some of his other like vulgar behaviors that really give a good foundation for somebody to be abusive. I think that I believe these women. The story that hit me the most was the underage girl. I had to like shower after that one. That one hit me.
I think a lot of people will want to defend Russell Brand because they agree with some of the things he says on some way, right? I think that he is in some ways an astute like political commenter. I think that, you know, like we said before, like there are things that he says that he does speak truth to power, and it's like, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day type of thing, right? You know, it's like if you say 10 things, but a couple of them are right, then at least you got a couple of them right. You know what I mean? But if you're a rapist, you're a rapist, dude. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like, how much can you possibly listen to the few things that he gets right here and there when it's coming out of the mouth of somebody who is like such a prolific liar?
Yeah. Sometimes I keep going back to how he just keeps talking so much and filling our ears. And I don't know if it's like an intentional or unconscious thing, but I kind of wonder if he just keeps putting out all of this media to kind of shove his old stuff down.
Yeah,
at some point he knows he fucked up.
We have so much from him. We have you can hear what Russell Brand thinks so fucking much, because there is so much fucking content.
Yeah, I wrote down so many disgusting quotes from here. The one quote I didn't get to read on the podcast is like one part of his comedy where he says that all sex should be thrilling and terrifying. Like, there's literally so much that you can pull up if you look up Russell Brand, and like part of me wonders if it's like some sort of PR stunt, like back to like what the obvious conspiracy is. Well, now when you look up his name, it can be a little harder to find that old stuff. And now it's just like Russell Brand wokeness. Russell Brand's a daddy. Russell Brand is a loving husband who I'm pretty sure he cheated on his wife.
there's so much evidence just in his comedy and stuff that he puts out about his behavior and about really who he is and his operate and the way he operates. I think of the quote was in his book, and he makes reference to it in some of his comedy too, about what he describes as the knobstacle course, which he describes as the challenge of decoding a woman's moral resistance. And there's also
how he breaks her down to get her into
bed. He makes, you know, specific reference to talking about how he likes to lie to women and how he'll manipulate them in any way to have sex with them.
And at the time of this comedy, it was like not really as well understood that coercion is not consent. So like hearing all of this stuff is just like, oh, well, that's how dudes do it, right? Like that's how they get a woman into bed. For a rapist, like that's the only way they can get a woman into bed.
Yeah, there's a quote from his second book, his Bookie Wook 2.
Wookie Book. I can't, that makes me gag.
And then he's got, you know, he's got like at least two or three other books too. He's credited with quite a few. Like I said, there's a ton of content, you know, this guy's put out a lot. But one thing that he says, you know, what kind of man was I treating women this way? If this is what I'm willing to tell you, can you imagine what's being left out?
This man has daughters. It's terrifying. And like, that's something, you know, the Russell Brand apologists are like, but you're going to throw him in jail now that he's settled down with kids. And I'm just like, I don't know, like I'm a daughter and I, you know, it's not good for any child to grow up with a parent in jail. But imagine that girl growing up and going and Googling her dad and finding all of this stuff and being like, why didn't you guys protect me from him? Why didn't you put him in jail sooner? So I don't know what we do now, but he's got to be canceled. We can't Russell Brand anymore. We can't listen to him. I'm sure that there's room for another woke wellness influencer to take his place.
Yeah, so like I said, it's nice that you might hit the nail every once in a while. You know what I mean? But that doesn't make you not a rapist.
In this case, like most of Russell Brand's content is horribly vulgar. And when you go back and look at that comedy, knowing that he has rape victims that talk about being raped the way he jokes about it, it's just like, well, I'm not going to watch that. I can't laugh at that. I don't want to see it.
Call back to Herman's third reason why cancel culture is good is because most of the shit that gets canceled was shitty anyways. And Russell Brand's comedy, okay at best, pretty shitty a lot of the time.
Yeah, along with his hair.
Yeah, that fucking hairdo.
It looks like when I went through my emo phase and would go in the bathroom and like flip my hair upside down and like hairspray it and like back comb it. Ugh, it's so bad.
Big hair. It was over before he was even doing it.
Okay, yeah, so Russell Brand is canceled. We are happy to say. I think he'll probably be done. We'll see what happens here. Maybe we'll have to do a Russell Brand update. Maybe more victims will come forward. Maybe he'll go to jail. But, you know, in our book, he's canceled.
Yeah, well, he's already been relegated to the dregs of the internet because his YouTube's been demonetized. So now he's got to make, he's on Rumble or some other platform I've absolutely not even heard of until he had to put a video out on it because he's not making money on his YouTube anymore.
So it is about the money, because he could just give us free videos. Like if he has the answer to the world, like he really, like that is his YouTube channel is him with the answers to the world. So you'd think he'd put that on for free, but no, we have to pay for it on Rumble, huh?
Just subscribe to his Substack.
Well, instead of subscribing to Russell Brand, you can subscribe to us.
Yeah, follow our podcast. We got more
Instagram
coming.
For free. We won't charge you. Our Instagram is at Everything's Canceled Podcast. And if you have ideas for podcasts on people that have been canceled or should be canceled or shouldn't have been canceled, you can email us at everythingscanceledpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us your ideas. Correct us. I don't care. Send us whatever you want.
And what's next? We have Danny Masterson next.
Yeah, Danny's next.
Let us know. This is our first episode. We had to record it a couple times with the baby, so forgive us. Yeah, it
came in a couple tries here.
But we hope we wrapped it up nicely in a pretty little bow for you, so that you could kind of understand the Russell Brand drama from beginning to end without having to do your own research.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, you only had to listen to us for an hour and a half.
We're going to cut that way down.
Maybe an hour after we cut it down. All right, well, signing off. Bye, Herman. Bye, Pee-wee.
Yeah. We're out. Thanks for listening.